To the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, a couple of takeaways from last night's Monday Night Football game. And why the NFL is still king. Plus, also coming up later on, we got plenty to do. Clemson diving into how things have gone the last few years, potentially leading to this season and their struggles. We'll get ready for the World Series tonight with the Braves and Astros. Throw it back to 99 last time the Braves were in a situation like this. Plus, can the Astros undo all their wrongdoings in the next 2 weeks? I'll let you know where I was right, where I was wrong. We'll do our power rankings of the best teams in the NFL. Plus, who are the leading candidates for the USC job? Tom Brady and his 600th touchdown pass. What's the biggest concern for each of the championship contenders in college football? And a whole lot more over the next few hours. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, you can always join the conversation as well. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show. 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. On Facebook at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, Blake is hanging out with us here for a few minutes. What's going on? How are you?
I'm good, my man. How about you?
Not too bad. Got plenty to do. Let me start with Monday Night Football last night and what we saw in that game last night, which, like quite a few of these primetime games, go back to Thursday Night Football. Not the most exciting game, but does come down to the final possession, and you have some sort of intrigue in how the game ends. Saints-Seahawks last night in a quarterback matchup of Jameis Winston and Geno Smith. Not what you're looking for in a Monday Night Football game. And it goes back to exactly what I said about Thursday Night Football. Two teams that I think will be in the market for a quarterback. One by choice and the other by force. Jameis Winston's not the answer for the Saints. And for the Seahawks, I don't know if Russell Wilson will be there much longer. They're now 2-5. They've lost three games in a row for the first time in almost a decade. In fact, over a decade. They're 0-3 at home. And when you look at the NFL and you look at the standings, going into this season, I, like many others, thought the NFC West would be the best division in football, best division in the NFL. And yet, when you look at the NFC West, you have the Niners now at 2-4, the Seahawks 2-5. And Seattle with a really uphill battle, an uphill climb just to try to reach the postseason. We'll see when Russell Wilson gets back. But they've already lost three in a row. Geno Smith is not the answer. And for Seattle, they further fall behind. Right, you imagine it take, what, at least 10 wins to make the playoffs this year? Go 10-7? And for the Seahawks, that would mean 8-2 the rest of the way with Geno Smith for at least a partial stretch of that 10-game season that remains. The 49ers, a disappointment as well. And when you look at the NFL and the way the standings have gone, who would have thought that at this point in the season, you'd have the Bengals and the Raiders be in first place? Even the Cowboys are surprised in the NFC East. The Buccaneers, the Packers, that should be expected. Even the Bills, yeah, maybe expected that. You probably expected the Titans in that lousy division. Who would have thought the Cardinals would be the last undefeated team, that they'd have the best record in football right now? Or that the Chiefs would be 3-4. It's why the NFL. I know this is a big college football area, and we talk plenty of college football, more so than the NFL, but it's why throughout the country, the NFL is still king. Because every Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday, you tune into these games, you don't know what's going to happen. They've already set a record this year, the NFL has, for most games decided in the final 2 minutes. Last night was another one. They're close, intriguing games. They can be unpredictable. In college football, we've enjoyed some parity this year and some chaos. Right? Alabama losing to Texas A&M. Iowa losing to Purdue. We've seen some chaos ensue this year in college football. But generally speaking, you know who's going to win the majority of these games. You have larger favorites. Teams are favored by over 20 points. And for the most part, there's been some surprises, but we knew going into this year, Georgia, Alabama, those would be the two best teams or two of the best teams in college football. They are. We figured Ohio State, they're the team to beat in the Big Ten. Right now, they are. We figured Oklahoma, yeah, they'll be the team to beat in the Big 12. Right now, they are. The one big surprise has been how poor Clemson has been this year. Or the ACC in general. We thought Miami, UNC, the ACC could be interesting. Turns out their three best teams are three huge disappointments. Otherwise, pretty standard. Right, but in the NFL, going into the season, how many thought that the Bengals would have the best record in the AFC? That the Bengals, the Titans, and the Raiders would be the teams with the best records in the AFC. And that the Arizona Cardinals would have the best record in the NFC at this point, heading into Halloween. But when you look at these teams, I'll continue to beat this dead horse, comes down to quarterbacks. The Cardinals are in first place in the NFC West. Kyler Murray has been great. The 49ers and the Seahawks are at the bottom of the NFC West. Well, Russell Wilson has missed the last 2.5 games, all of which were losses. They were 2-2 at the time of his injury, so they were doing okay. The 49ers have had problems with Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. Kyle Shanahan won't even commit to Jimmy Garoppolo in the postgame, so they're 2-4. They're struggling at the quarterback position. But the other teams that have been surprisingly good, Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow has been excellent. Had over 400 yards on Sunday. For the Raiders at 5-2, Derek Carr has been really good. In fact, his performance on Sunday was the second highest completion percentage for any quarterback with over 30 pass attempts in a game. He went 31 of 34. If you're completing over 90% of your passes when throwing it over 30 times, that's pretty good. Derek Carr is having a really good season. The Raiders are 5-2. Right, it comes down to the quarterbacks. The Dolphins have been a disappointment this year. Well, you know, Tua was injured for a while. He's played better the last couple of weeks, but got off to a little bit of a slow start. There's a reason why the Dolphins are still interested in Deshaun Watson, because they have to get better at the quarterback position. They've been a big disappointment this year at 1-6. All right, you look around at the teams that are doing well, because they are the ones with the quarterbacks who are doing well. And when you watch that game last night, you watch Jameis Winston, you watch Geno Smith, you realize, yeah, this isn't it. These guys, they're not it. Jameis Winston has 13 touchdowns this year, but he's averaging fewer than 200 yards per game. He's been somewhat efficient, but he hasn't been overly effective or just dynamic for that offense. Geno Smith, over half of his yards came on one pass last night. Other than that one pass to DK Metcalf, he had something like 82 yards the rest of the game. That's not going to get it done for you either. The Saints, I would imagine, we did this on Friday's show after watching Thursday Night Football, running through the teams that could be in the market for a new quarterback in the offseason. The Saints, I imagine, would be one of them. Winston's playing well enough. They're 4-2. He's taking care of the football well enough. He has enough touchdown passes. But if the game's on the line, I don't think you can trust Winston to go down there and win it for you. And the Seahawks are another team that could be in the market, but not by choice. Maybe by force, because Russell Wilson, who was unhappy a year ago, may be forcing his way out. And if nothing else, he has more leverage now than he did a few weeks ago. He's been on the sideline, and the Seahawks have gone 0-3. Geno Smith had 160 yards last night. They scored 10 points. Fewest points scored by the Seahawks in about a decade. I think since before Russell Wilson was drafted. I think that's how far back you have to go. Since Russell Wilson became a Seahawk, I believe they have scored over 10 points in every game since then, until last night. And Russ is sitting on that sideline and being a good teammate, and we see him going through these awkward two-minute drills and warm-ups, going through a whole practice by himself. But he's probably over there with a big smile on his face. He was unhappy with how things were going after last season. Helped lead to a change where he got a new offensive coordinator. Then he gets injured this year, and the team is tanking. Probably will be in finishing last place or third in the NFC West, even by the time Russell Wilson gets back. And now he has the leverage of, hey, without me, right, this is what you guys were. Three straight losses with Geno Smith. We'll see how they do moving forward. I think they get the Jaguars this week at home. You should win that game. But nobody's impressed by Geno. Now, he did cover the spread last night on Monday Night Football. That's where he does pretty well, 6-1 against the number in prime time, and we took the Seahawks yesterday. But he's not good enough to win actual games for you, to get you to the playoffs. And for Russell Wilson, he can use this as his leverage come the offseason to either get something more than he wants or to force his way out like he almost did this past offseason. And if he wasn't happy after 12 wins, I don't know how he is going to be after a season like this, where Seattle's defense hasn't been good enough, the team's not going to make the playoffs, he's injured and not playing. I don't think that'll make him any happier in Seattle. Let me shift to this. I saw this interesting data online yesterday, breaking down the roster management. Right, when something happens, you can sometimes look back and see the red flags that lead up to it. I always use the example of the movie Usual Suspects, where in the end, right? The interrogation with Kaiser Soze, and then he realizes, Chaz Palminteri realizes afterwards, that that was the guy he was looking for, that he let out of his office, Kevin Spacey, and he runs outside to try to find him, and it's too late. He already got, like, in a cab around the corner, got into a car, drove off, and he realized, man, the guy I was looking for, I had him in my office, and I didn't realize it was him. But after Kevin Spacey left, Chaz Palminteri's looking around his office, and he sees different things on the wall that Kevin Spacey was referencing. He didn't realize. Kevin Spacey was taking names off of the posters or phrases or terms or whatever and using those in his story, whatever was in the office. And Chaz realized after he left, he was looking around, and it dawned on him. Wait a minute. Right, he just made up all this story based off of things in this office. That was my guy. My point being, sometimes you can look back and see the red flags after something happens, right? Where you should have saw it coming, but you didn't realize until it actually happened. And then you look back and you say, oh, yes, now I can understand why. We probably should have forecasted that. It's somewhat similar with Clemson this year. I saw an interesting set of data yesterday online about roster management. The amount of players that each school brings in a recruiting class each year, and then the players they've lost through the transfer portal and the players they've gained through the transfer portal. And if you compare Clemson to the other top programs since 2016, Clemson is the only program to not bring anybody in with the transfer portal. Alabama has used 8 transfers, Georgia 9, Ohio State 7, Oklahoma 19, the Gamecocks 16 over that period of time. But when it comes to transfers out, Clemson has lost 22 players. So they've lost 22 players in the portal, haven't replaced any of them. And when it comes to the recruiting class, since 2016, Clemson's average size is 20 players per year, compared to, say, Alabama, 26 per season. And I know there's a whole thing. You only have a certain number of scholarships and how many scholarships you have available each year and this and that. But if you just look at the raw numbers without maybe that context, going back to 2016, Alabama, on average, is bringing 6 more players in and then also about a transfer and a half per year. And if you add it up, right, over the course of about 5 years, you're looking at almost 2 recruiting classes that Alabama is bringing in more players than Clemson over the last couple of years. Same with Georgia and Ohio State and Oklahoma, bringing in more guys over the last 5 years, taking advantage of the transfer portal. And it's a difference that it adds up after a 5-year stretch of when you compare. Clemson brings in, say, a total of 30 players, and Alabama brought in a total of 50, just to throw out random numbers. And when you bring in more players like that, right, it adds to more depth. You have a better chance of more of them hitting. If you lose somebody in the transfer portal, you could go out and replace them elsewhere. Interesting roster management from the last couple of years where these other programs are bringing in more players. You look at the recruiting class for 2022. Right now, Clemson with 13 players, Georgia, for example, 21. And again, a lot of it comes down, it's a numbers game. How much availability do you have? But these other programs are pumping in more and more players each of the last couple of years. And it adds up over time where you're adding a lot more players. And then it's just simply, you know, an odds game. Do the math that a certain percentage of those players will hit or work out. And if you're bringing in more guys, you have a higher chance of more of them working out, therefore adding more talent to the roster over a 5-year window. Coming up, what's the biggest concern for the championship contenders in college football? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, what's the biggest concern for each of the championship contenders in college football? It's the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Get to that here in a little bit. Plus our top 10, as always, on every Tuesday. Open the show talking about last night's Monday Night Football game and how unpredictable the NFL has been once again through the first 7 weeks. Well, we will order the 10 best teams in the NFL coming up later on this afternoon and play a little matchmaker when it comes to the quarterback position. Deshaun Watson could be on the move in the next week. Is Russell Wilson going to be on the move this offseason? What about Aaron Rodgers? We'll place them in their best fits coming up a little bit later on. But College football, we got the new top 25 AP poll. We're getting closer to the first playoff ranking. When you look at the top teams in college football, what's the biggest concern for these teams as they try to make their path to the national championship? Looking at just the top few teams. I mean, number 7, Oregon, the concern would be if they even have the opportunity playing in the Pac-12. Number 6, Michigan, I don't know if the offense is dynamic enough. But focusing strictly on the top 5, starting with Ohio State. The defense has been playing much better. In fact, Ohio State as a team has been playing much better football of late. How they're still ahead of Oregon in the rankings despite losing to Oregon, well, I don't really like that. But Ohio State is the team, the program that I feel is kind of being slept on. I know they're the number 5 team in the country. They're the highest ranked team in the Big Ten. But because of that loss to Oregon, I think people are kind of forgetting about Ohio State. A lot of talk about Michigan, Michigan State. We were talking about Iowa, Penn State before. And because of that one loss early, maybe it crossed Ohio State out in your mind. But the loss was to now a top 10 team. And in the last 4 games, Ohio State has scored over 50 points in all 4 games and averaged to win by about 50 points. They haven't played great teams. Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana. Saturday will be an interesting matchup against Penn State. But Ohio State has kicked it into high gear here heading towards Halloween. The concern for them moving forward, still the defense. Because the defense hasn't been tested. Right against Oregon, they allowed 35 points. They were tested that day. Since then, they've played Tulsa, Akron, Rutgers, Maryland, Indiana with their backup quarterback. Haven't really been tested. And they won't moving forward. Penn State, Nebraska, Purdue, even Michigan State, Michigan. These are teams that are winning with their defense. Right, Penn State, you saw them this past Saturday against Illinois. They had just 220 yards of offense. It took 9 overtimes, and they still couldn't win. They couldn't punch it in on a 2-point conversion. Plenty of issues about Sean Clifford, who's now dealing with an injury. So the concern for Ohio State would be that defense, but the problem is we won't know the answer until it may be too late. Right? Once they get to, if they get to, the college football playoff, at that point we'll find out, size them up, and see, okay, can this defense slow down in Alabama enough? Or in Oklahoma, or maybe even a Georgia, whoever they get matched up with. C.J. Stroud has been playing really well, but still, a young quarterback that in a big game, if you're going to have to count on him to score a bunch of points, that could be a risky way to try to go win your championship. For Ohio State, the concern is the defense. Problem is, we won't be able to see that defense get tested again probably until the playoff if they get there. The biggest game left for Ohio State still is at Michigan, final game of the season. I think they handle Penn State on Saturday, though it should be a very interesting game. But it'll come down to that final game of the regular season. If Michigan can get past Michigan State, plus rivalry, it's at Michigan, all that sort of stuff, can Ohio State run the table the rest of the way? I think the biggest test will be the final game against Michigan. Number 4, Oklahoma. The big concern for them is just, can we buy into this program? Right? They were down 10-0 against Kansas into the second half on Saturday. They won and dropped in the rankings because that's how unimpressive of a victory it was against Kansas. Now, the offense had been, in a small sample size, much better with Caleb Williams compared to Spencer Rattler until that Kansas game where they struggled into the second half. But the problem at Oklahoma is just that they've let opponents hang around. Their average margin of victory against FBS teams is in the single digits, which is the lowest for any of the remaining undefeated teams. They beat Tulane by only 5, Nebraska by only 7, West Virginia by only 3, Kansas State by only 6. It took a comeback against Texas. For Kansas, they were trailing in the second half. I always talk about point differential. Their point differential, because they're undefeated, is obviously positive and it's pretty good. But when you break it down and the fact that they average to win their games by only about 8 points a week, right, that's a little concerning for the competition that they've played, having only played one ranked team. What happens when they do go up against, say, a Georgia, an Alabama, maybe even a Cincinnati in the playoff, one of the other top teams in the country? For them, the rest of the way, you have to watch out for Iowa State. And then the game the following week when they end the regular season at Oklahoma State. Those are still the two biggest games on the schedule, and that's how their season will come to an end. Moving forward on the top 25, Alabama, the number 3 team in the country, the biggest concern for them would be their defense. But specifically, their defense when they go up against physical teams. That's when their defense has struggled. Now, many thought heading into this season that Alabama could have not only the best defense in the country this year, but at least from a front seven perspective, could be one of the most talented and best front sevens we've seen in college football. That was the talk heading into the season. And it hasn't quite lived up to those expectations. But when they have struggled, it was against Florida, who just ran it down their throats, right? When they've struggled against the teams like that. Even Texas A&M was a physical approach with Isaiah Spiller. And so you may not have to worry about that against LSU. They did well enough against Tennessee this past week. They looked really good against a Mississippi State team that just wants to throw it around the whole time. But towards the end of the season, Auburn could be interesting. But especially in the SEC title game, if you get matched up with, say, a Georgia. And you know Georgia's going to play really good defense and try to hold you to a low amount of points. Can you do the same to them? And Georgia is a physical team. That's the way Alabama's defense has struggled. And they've won before without having the best defense in recent years, but they've had a really good offense that can make up for it, that can win those shootouts. Just go back to last year when they allowed whatever it was, 50 points to Ole Miss, and still won the game. I don't know if they can win like that this year. Texas A&M was a bit of a shootout. They allowed 41 points and lost because their offense scored only 38. That would be my concern for Alabama. Is this defense good enough, specifically against physical teams? It's a lot like the Packers. Remember the Packers, right? They would get blown out by the 49ers every matchup. The defense would look solid. Then you'd go up against a team that just wants to run it down your throat, and you couldn't do anything about it. They could just manhandle you. And for the Packers, they would look fine throughout the season. Then they'd face the 49ers in the playoffs, and you realize this is a bad matchup. Similar for Alabama. This defense will look fine until you go up against a Georgia in the playoff and you realize, this is a bad matchup. In fact, we wouldn't have to wait till the playoff. Probably going to get that matchup in the SEC title game. And for Alabama, you're going to have to win that game to even get to the playoff. And if your defense is struggling, like against Texas A&M, can your offense be good enough to make up that difference, to outdo your defense? Bryce Young's playing really well this year, but I don't know if Alabama is as strong as the last couple of seasons. When Mac Jones or even Tua before that, that offense could win those shootouts, even if their defense isn't top-notch. For Alabama, the biggest test the rest of their season would be that potential SEC title game with Georgia. May not be a great matchup for their defense, or just for them in general, going up against a really good defense on the other side. The number two team, Cincinnati, the big concern for them may be away from the football field and just trying to get the respect of those around college football. They are the number two team in the country, so they've been given some respect already. But will they be able to hold that position in the top four if they run the table? The other concerns for Cincinnati is, number one, dealing with this pressure that they haven't had to deal with before. Right? It's not a Georgia. It's not an Alabama. They've been here before. The players, the coaches, the program, they're used to this. For Cincinnati, this is all kind of new. And the number two concern are a couple of stats that indicate the vulnerabilities of Cincinnati offensively that could cost you a game on any given Saturday. And that's third down offense and red zone offense. They're ranked in the 70s in both in terms of college football teams. Not percentage, but in terms of ranking. There's over 70 teams better than Cincinnati in the red zone offensively and on third down. And that's a concern. When you play a close game against Navy on Saturday, when you're in a dogfight like that, you have to be really effective and efficient on third downs and inside the red zone. This offense has been inconsistent at times, and it could allow another team to either hang in there or sneak up on you if you're not playing your best football on a Saturday. The biggest concern for Cincinnati, other than this idea of, are they good enough to compete with these top programs? The biggest concern for them is just simply, will they be given that opportunity? And the toughest game left for them is coming up around Thanksgiving when they take on SMU, who is undefeated and ranked in the top 25. In fact, they've made it now into the top 20. That'll be a big test for Cincinnati and should be a fun game for that conference. And lastly, you have Georgia at number one. And this is what gave me this whole idea of this segment or these talking points. The biggest concern for Georgia, and it may not seem like much of a concern, but it's that quarterback position. Now, the quarterback position is the most important position in all of sports. We know that. But for Georgia, they have some good options. Because you have JT Daniels, and you have Stetson Bennett. And Kirby Smart said that he plans to play both of them moving forward. Now, the old cliche, right, if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks. Right? If you have to try to pick between the two and they're battling and you're splitting reps, if you don't have one good enough to beat out the other, then really you don't have a good enough quarterback. It's a little bit different here with Georgia. My concern would be twofold. Number one, for Stetson Bennett, that the team is playing really well with him. He's doing just fine. He fits well with this team because this defense is so good that you don't have to do a whole lot on offense. And so he's perfect for, you know, he's not going to take a lot of chances. He's the ultimate game manager. He'll keep you on script, just take care of the football, make a couple of throws here or there. You don't have to score a ton of points. There's not a lot of pressure on you. Georgia's defense only allows, 7 points a game. Just score twice, you'll win. But when it comes to actually winning a national championship, I still believe you need that dynamic quarterback that can make the big throws. I don't think that's Stetson Bennett. I think it could be JT Daniels. But here's the issue, and I've brought this up before in the show. It's reminiscent of the Chicago Bears from about 15 years ago. That the Bears had an injury to Rex Grossman. They put in Kyle Orton, I think it was his rookie season or his second year. And Kyle Orton, he didn't play great, but the team played really well with him because they were such a good defensive team back then. And Orton didn't have to do a whole lot. He just didn't screw it up. And they got to the playoffs. And then they realized once they reached the playoffs, yeah, Kyle Orton's been good, but in order to win these types of games, we need a really dynamic quarterback. We need a playmaker. And they thought Rex Grossman, he was the more talented quarterback than Kyle Orton, so they thought that could be Rex. He could give us a better chance. And they went back to Rex Grossman. He was healthy and ready, and they went back to him in the playoff game, and he played terrible, and they lost, and it was to the Panthers, I believe, and that ended their season. And a lot of Bears fans were upset. Why are you disrupting the mojo? Kyle Orton led this team all year. They won with him. Why are you throwing Grossman back in? And the other conversation, the other side from the Bears would be, well, Grossman's the more talented quarterback. He gives us the better chance. And then you could have a real debate here about what's more important, right? That talent or disrupting the chemistry. And that's my concern for Georgia. Maybe it's part of the reason why Kirby is going to try to ease JT Daniels in now instead of strictly go, just right back to him. JT Daniels is the better quarterback, and I think you need Daniels' ability to actually go win a national championship this year. I don't think Stetson Bennett can, but you also don't want to disrupt things. You get to a certain point in the season where you kind of just have to leave it how it is. My concern for Georgia is this quarterback situation, how they handle these two and how it affects, or maybe it doesn't, affects the team maybe positively moving forward. Now I know Steve Spurrier won a national championship, right? Urban Meyer won a national championship using two quarterbacks. I know it's been done before, but I never liked this idea of splitting reps. And then you'll hear from former quarterbacks who don't like it either. Now you got to leave a guy out there to get a rhythm. You can't do a series here, a series there, or take them out on a third down. I never liked that idea. So my biggest concern for Georgia here moving forward is how Kirby handles that quarterback position. Because there may be a situation come playoff time where they actually do allow a couple of touchdowns against an Oklahoma or against an Alabama. And if they roll with Stetson Bennett, would he be good enough to make the plays? I don't think so. It's why I think you need JT Daniels out there. And it may sound silly, it may sound like making up a concern out of nothing, but is throwing JT Daniels back in there, does that disrupt anything for this Georgia team that has been playing well with Stetson Bennett? My biggest concerns for all these teams. And when it comes to Georgia and the biggest game left on their schedule, you could certainly point to this weekend against Florida. Otherwise, Georgia, all things considered, with a pretty easy SEC schedule this year, won't have to worry until a potential matchup with Alabama in the SEC title game. But in terms of the regular season, you get past Florida this weekend and you are in the clear. Missouri, Tennessee, Charleston Southern, Georgia Tech, those should be four pretty easy wins for Georgia. But never count out Dan Mullen. He loses games he shouldn't, but they also will find a way to compete in games that they shouldn't either. And this is one of those. It's a rivalry. It's a neutral site. Mullen is one of the best offensive coaches going up against this really good defense. Don't count out Florida Saturday in that big rivalry game against Georgia. I was talking last segment about the Clemson Tigers, and I found this interesting data set online that compared the number of players programs have brought in since 2016 and then also the number of players that were lost in the transfer portal, replaced in the transfer portal, yada, yada, yada. Since 2016, if you want to compare Clemson to just strictly Alabama, Alabama has brought in 153 players compared to 122 for Clemson. When you look at the transfer portal, 8 for Alabama, 0 for Clemson. So if you add that all up, that's what, 39 additional players brought in by Alabama compared to Clemson since 2016. The average Clemson recruiting class in that same span is 20. Alabama has brought in 39 more players, essentially meaning that's two additional recruiting classes Alabama has brought in compared to Clemson. Alabama has added 39 more players. And you may say, well, it's a numbers game, right? They had more guys go to the NFL, this and that. But The Athletic did an interesting article about how Alabama, Nick Saban, not that he's breaking the rules, but much like his good friend Bill Belichick, they know the loopholes and how to bend the rules. And there is an interesting article done by The Athletic showing how Alabama was able to have a recruiting class of 27 this past year. how they were able to bring in 27 new players, especially with a pandemic and everybody getting an extra year of eligibility. And, you know, they find ways to stretch the numbers a little bit, a few workarounds to get players in there. And we all love exclusivity, right? Exclusiveness. But for Clemson, that ability maybe is catching up to them and hurting them, at least for this season. Not wanting to dip into the transfer portal. Even Dabo, his unwillingness to recruit a kid until he meets them or until they get to a certain age or until they reach like 16, they get their driver's license, he has to meet them in person, all that sort of stuff. It's worked just fine for the last couple of years, and it may work just fine moving forward, but at least for this year, maybe it has caught up to them. Alabama has brought in 40 additional players compared to Clemson in the last 5 years. It's like adding two additional recruiting classes in that time frame. That's tough to compete with. Now, here was offensive coordinator Tony Elliott in his press conference talking with the media yesterday and was asked about, you know, the concerns with Clemson or just what they're hearing, how everyone has been very critical of this disappointing Clemson season. Here's what Tony Elliott had to say.
You know, I look at it, and I guess the way I convince myself is I know they're paid to say some of those things to create that. But I also know, too, that we've always been in a situation where people want to criticize Clemson, right, wrong, or indifferent. You know, they want to criticize Clemson. And when we, with the success that we have, never felt like we should have been there, you know. And so it doesn't surprise me. But also, too, you know, you get frustrated sometimes. I don't hear much of it, but there's some comments that people are making that you can tell that they're not educated on the comment that they're making. Those are the ones that frustrate you. But at the end of the day, we gave them the ammunition to say it. So, you know, we got to own it. And all we can do is go back. And it's a what have you done for me lately business. It's a what have you done for me lately world. And right now, you know, we haven't done enough for them to say nice things. So I understand it.
Tony Elliott talking to the media yesterday. And you can understand the criticism as Clemson, despite their past success, is the most disappointing program in college football this year. Maybe it is because of the lack of numbers over recent years. Oklahoma, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama bringing in a lot more players than Clemson. And maybe even if just for one season, it caught up to them this year. When we come back, the World Series begins tonight. Can the Astros make up for their past with four more victories? We'll get to that next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You're doing a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do it. Because, I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Tulsa that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show. Up on the roof.
Coming up, can the Astros undo their wrongdoings with four more wins? We'll get to that here on the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The World Series begins tonight. For the first time in 22 years, if you're a Braves fan, you could sit down and watch your team play in the biggest spot tonight. With game one in Houston against the Astros, 8:09 first pitch on Fox. You could also listen to the game right here. You may normally listen to the game on the Braves radio network on her sister station, but when it comes to the World Series, ESPN has the exclusive rights in terms of, you know, if you have the ESPN in the market. It's a whole long story short. The games will be carried here on ESPN Radio, the national broadcast for the World Series. So if you're going to be in the car, if you prefer listening to the game or listen as you watch, whatever it may be, tune in here tonight on ESPN Radio, and not only for Game 1 of the World Series tonight, but all series long for the Braves and Astros. It begins tonight, Charlie Morton on the mound for Atlanta. We'll get into the actual breakdown of this matchup in this series coming up a little bit later on. Plus, we will flash back on a throwback Tuesday to what things were like the last time the Braves were in a World Series back in 1999. You know, what's interesting is that that series actually ended on October 27th, which is tomorrow. The Braves lost Game 5. That was the end of the World Series, October 27th. Here we are on October 26th, and the World Series is just beginning. So it's almost the anniversary to the day of the last time they played in the World Series. That's tomorrow. Tomorrow, 22 years ago, was the last World Series game the Braves played in, and now they're back starting this series tonight. We'll get into some of the X's and O's a little bit later on. But for now, I want to focus on this idea that the Astros can make up for what they did en route to their World Series a couple of years ago by winning this World Series. That they are four wins away from making up for the wrongdoings in the past by proving that they didn't need to cheat, right? That's this idea, that if they win the World Series this year, they'll say, well, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. We just won the World Series. We're the best team in baseball, so we didn't need to cheat in 2017. I don't like this logic or idea. Paul Hembodikas, he goes by Hembo. He's on Greeny on national radio every morning with Greeny on ESPN Radio. They were talking about this yesterday, and here was Hembo's thought process about the Astros being able to make up for that cheating scandal a couple years ago if they can win this World Series.
They play the Astros, who, in my judgment, are four wins away from vindicating themselves. Now, what they did in 2017 was awful. We know that. And we aren't supposed to forget it. We're not going to forget it. But if they wind up winning the World Series this year, five years later, presumably on the up and up, I think it puts Jose Altuve back on a Hall of Fame track. I think it puts Carlos Correa back on a Hall of Fame track. And in some sense, vindicates the fact that they cheated in 2017, and then being able to do this again this way with all that scrutiny and all the hatred that they've, you know, sort of received around baseball is really quite a thing.
I strongly disagree with Hembo talking about the Astros for a number of different reasons. Number one, notice that he used the word presumably when talking about if the Astros are doing it cleanly, because we still can't trust them. That's part of the problem right there. That tells you all you need to know. You can't trust the Astros that they're doing things cleanly right now. So can we really give them all the credit in the world and forgive their past transgressions when we don't even know if they're still they lost the benefit of the doubt. They lost our trust. We don't know what to expect from these guys. For all we know, they could be up to no good once again because they've done it in the past. But otherwise, the other things that were mentioned puts Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa back on a Hall of Fame track. No, it doesn't. Not for me. Sorry, you cheated. That's it. To me, I view this very similar to the steroid players. And you could tell me about A-Rod and Barry Bonds and, oh, he didn't need steroids. He was already a Hall of Fame player. Okay. But that was the choice he made. And there's consequences to those actions. Unfortunately, there weren't many consequences to the Astros' actions, and here they are competing for another World Series a couple years ago. But I can't put Barry Bonds in the Hall of Fame because, well, he's a Hall of Fame talent anyways. Okay, well, he decided to cheat. And that was the decision he made. And so now there has to be some form of punishment. Sorry, but I view you a little bit differently. In fact, I'd even go this far to tell you that if you didn't have to cheat, I look at that even worse. If we're talking about a team that's not very good and they're found to be cheating to try to close the gap, I understand that more than if you're trying to sell me that this Astros team was so good they didn't have to cheat anyways. That's worse to me. Then why are you doing it? Right? If you want to tell me, they would have won the World Series anyways. They don't have to cheat. That doesn't help their case. That makes it better? Oh, okay. Well, in that case, they would have won the World Series anyways. Okay, well, then who cares about the cheating? It would have happened anyways, so I'll just let them cheat. Try telling your teacher that. I would have gotten an A anyways, so I should be able to cheat on this test. If you have the student that's flunking class, always getting Fs, and you catch him cheating, okay, I can understand. I get it. You have to cheat. You're trying to pass the class. You don't know the material. You're not a very smart kid anyways. But if you're trying to sell me on it, it's just like Barry Bonds. He would have been a Hall of Fame talent anyways. To me, that makes it worse. Then why are you cheating? You don't need to use steroids as much as the guy that's just trying to earn a spot on the roster and keep his career going. It's that, like, arrogance that not only you're already a good player, and now you want to cheat as well and gain an additional edge. And by the way, let's go back to that World Series for the Astros when they cheated against the Dodgers and got caught. Right? It was a 7-game series. They beat the Dodgers in Game 7. So how can we sit here and so firmly say, oh, they would have won anyways? Do we know that? They barely won while they were cheating. So how different could that year have been if they played it straight up? But if they win this year, it's no sort of vindication. If Barry Bonds got off the juice to finish his career and kept hitting home runs, to me that doesn't vindicate it. Sure, I would tell you, yeah, Barry Bonds, a good player with or without steroids. But I wouldn't just turn the other way. I wouldn't look away and say, well, that's okay. He's allowed to cheat then because he's already a good player. So we'll forgive the steroid use and the advantages gained because he's a good player anyways. Right, for the Astros, I can't just look past, well, you know what? They were a good team, so that's okay. They can cheat all they want because they'd be good anyways. And what's interesting to me, I was thinking about this, is that we are always for second chances, and so too am I. But what I always find interesting is if somebody screws up in life and then does better afterwards, right, we look at that and it's okay. Say somebody cheats in sports, or I guess let's just say somebody commits a crime. Somebody robs, they steal from you, right? Somebody steals from you, and they get caught, they get punished, but then they turn their life around afterwards, and they're on the right track. And then you have another person who does the same exact stuff, but in the opposite order. They get their life on the right track, they're having a good life, but they slip up once, they steal from you, and they do that secondly. Don't you view those people differently? Aren't we more forgiving for the person who responds well after the infraction? Where they lived the same lives, they did the same things. They both had successful careers with a screw-up. It just so happened that one person did the screw-up earlier before their successful career. The other person had the successful career and then screwed up. And it's interesting that we typically view the one that did it in a particular order, in which they bounce back from that issue, more so than the one who had a great career and then did the cheating or the stealing or whatever, fell into a drug problem, and you look at them a little bit differently. My point being, they've done the same things, just in a different order. Right, for the Astros, just because they win the World Series now doesn't make up for what they did before. I don't know why we view this like, well, you know, they came back and they made up for it afterwards compared to if they won a World Series and then cheated on the second one, if you get what I'm saying. It had been the same career path, just in a different order, and we usually view the people that turn things around afterwards in a more positive light. I don't get that because they did the same things, good and bad. For the Houston Astros, 4 wins this year doesn't change anything in my mind. They were still cheaters of the ultimate prize in baseball, suffered no punishment. And if they win the World Series this year, it only makes matters worse. Yeah, you could tell me it shows that they didn't need to cheat. Well, to me, that's worse off than the person that does. If you're stealing food to try to feed your family, right, because you can't eat otherwise, I can understand that a little bit more than the person stealing just for the hell of it. Sorry, I'm not going to be as understanding if you get caught. For the Houston Astros, if they didn't have to cheat a few years ago, I think that makes only matters worse. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride?
We're wrapping up Hour 1 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We were talking about Clemson earlier in the numbers game when it comes to players being brought into the program compared to other top programs in recent years. Along the same lines, I also found interesting that this piece of data that, according to the state auditor, Clemson spends approximately 42% of its athletics budget on the football program. For the Gamecocks, they spend only 25% of their budget on the football program. As the old saying goes, you got to spend money to make money, right? And you know, you invest more in what you're more interested in or concerned with or care about, like your company, the company in which you work at. you will devote more resources to a certain area that is most important. Maybe the sales team gets extra benefits because they're the ones bringing in all the money. Clemson's committing almost half of their budget to football for the Gamecocks, only a quarter. We've talked about this before when comparing coaches' salaries in the SEC as well. Right, to try to keep up with those around you, you have to also be putting in as much as those around you as well. Hour two coming up next. I'll let you know where I've been right and wrong, plus our Tuesday top 10. Get ready for game one of the World Series and a whole lot more. It's the Morning Midday Show on ESPN Radio.